Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Truth of Happiness Dhamma study, Sangha discussion on the Four Noble Truths, and Dhamma talk that introduces the fourth week study of the Wisdom Factors of the Eightfold Path. This was recorded on January 7th, 2017, at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace.
So this week, the discussion in your study was on the third week, the third chapter on the Four Noble Truths. So I'd like to hear what you learned about that, any insights you've gained. And keeping in mind that everything the Buddha taught was in the context of those Four Noble Truths. And when he described awakening in relation to that, in relation to right view, he said that right view is a view that completely understands dukkha, understand stress. There's more. Were you here the whole time?
I was doing yoga meditation.
Okay. So we're discussing the Four Noble Truths. So. Laura, it's good to see you.
It's very good to be here.
Have you been able to keep up with us?
I have not been reading book, but was this Tuesday's class, like a few weeks ago?
Saturday is a week behind.
It's a week behind, and then there was no class on New Year's Eve, is that correct? Or
no, there was.
Yeah, we missed the...
So that's how... that's where I'm at, not knowing where it's at here, but...
Well, honestly, I'm a little confused between the 2 weeks. Somehow I can't figure out if I'm...
But, you know, that being said, I'm diligently trying to maintain and restore my practice that kind of withered away as my children started school and I started work again. And over the holiday, I had a moment of having to completely let go of this not-self that I had built up again. Without knowing that it was happening, but it was, you know, not knowing the extent to the extent to which the building blocks had kind of piled up. Mostly due to my lack of meditating every day, because with that lack of meditating, the, you know, recognition of the Eightfold Path within my daily life kind of became more fuzzy. But the Four Noble Truths do continue to be this kind of bedrock and pillars in my daily life when things seem to get really stressful or really hard, or I'm really tired, I'm reminded that this is what's occurring, that this is stress. I'm clinging to wanting things to be other than what they are, and if I can just sit with it and let it go, then I can move on from that.
Yeah.
So, reading the chapter would probably be good. But I think I'm in the midst of balancing a lot of different things, and most importantly, I did actually start meditating in the morning. I was, you know, as groggy as I was at 6 a.m., I just immediately, you know, went to meditate instead of going downstairs and making coffee and making lunches and doing the whole thing. And allowed myself that time because it is that important. And I'm just amazed at how strong conditioning is and how strong this tendency to build up this not-self really, really is. It's really a powerful conditioning that I just find that is, if I'm not diligently meditating and attention to the Eightfold Path, it just comes right back in and kind of takes over. And I don't really have a choice. Like, I feel like I'm at this point in the practice where I don't have a choice. Like, I can't let it go. You know, I can't let that not self build up those blocks. It gets to a point where it's just, it's impossible to continue living like that. You know, it's just, it doesn't make sense anymore, and it's, and it, yeah, so that's where I'm at. I don't know what chapter that is. yeah, I'm very grateful to be here and glad for the Sangha group and the class and for you and all the work you do. So, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you're here today. The you gained such useful insight into, maybe a better way of saying it is you gain a strong right view to be able to recognize when you're not fully engaged in the practice, the effects of it. Because without that developing right view, you wouldn't even notice it. You just, this is just another aspect of life. It's just difficult. And you might blame yourself or blame the world instead of just recognizing that it's a little, it's a lack of focus. It's an aspect of the Eightfold Path. It's an aspect of right effort, all the rest of it. So I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for what you said. Anthony, good to see you this morning.
Hey, John. My introduction into the Four Noble Truths this week was, I had a trial on for Monday, and you know, all the stress with preparing for that, and it ended up getting adjourned anyway, but you know, I didn't know that. And so it was just, you know, you get the mental tug of war, you know, that, you know, why can't I settle this? Or why is this person being unreasonable? And it's just coming back to accepting that this is a challenge and it's stressful, but it's not going to last. And in the past, I could say that I never settle into a trial until after I do my opening because it's just too much going on, like the adrenaline rush, and it's not even like I'm doing it too long to be worried. It's not worry. It's just the natural fight or flight response that kicks up before trial. And the interesting thing is when I learn to appreciate that that's a good thing, like, you know, that's what nature designed me for, it stops becoming so stressful.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was that, and then, or I know I was sitting up and I could hear the thought coming and I just meditated in bed, like just laying down. I just said, I'm just going to concentrate on the breath going in and out of my nose, and I fell asleep. So I got through it with almost no stress by continuing to use those techniques.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by that.
And it's exactly how it should be, you know, the practical application of it. You're recognizing what could be your own contributions to increasing that stress, and you're just not, you're practicing restraint. You're not going there. So good for you. That's how it works. And you're in such a unique, somewhat unique position that you're charged to be an adversary, but your mindful inclination is to keep that adversarial situation as peaceful as possible.
Yeah, you're right, and there's a real tendency to want to, you know, go in the mud.
Yeah, and you're not. Thank you. Glad you're here, Becky. Good to see you this morning.
Thank you. Good to be here. Well, I read the chapter, but I don't feel like I've really internalized the Four Noble Truths yet.
I don't
know. If I can think about the Four Noble Truths and then realize how I'm using them or how they're helping me. What I can say is that I did meditate, but only once since I was here last, you know, with Christmas and the wedding.
Yeah.
And that was just like a couple of days ago when, in addition to Christmas and the wedding, we had house guests for 2 days. So I was preparing for that last week. And I just felt like overwhelmed for a minute, you know, like I was just, I find myself focusing on smaller and smaller things.
Yeah.
Smaller and smaller things, smaller and smaller details. So I just went outside, it was a beautiful day, sat on the deck, and I just started breathing, meditated. And I said to myself, I'm probably only going to be able to just sit down here and do this for a couple minutes before I'm going to not be able to do it anymore because I had so much going on in my mind.
Yeah.
And I was able, I sat there, and then all of a sudden I realized that I was actually hearing leaves hit the surface of the deck. I was hearing the wind far away that sounded like a river. I was hearing the birds actually flutter their wings around, and I thought to myself, oh, this is, I was like, oh, this is so wonderful. And I, you know, I just opened my eyes, I looked at my watch, I've been there for like about 6 minutes, and that was probably the longest I ever meditated on my own, ever. And so that was really encouraging to make me, you know, start to realize. Then I thought to myself, well, you did recognize what your mind was doing. You did recognize how to deal with that stress and make it less difficult. And it really did help. And it really helped me for the entire rest of the visit with my friends. I was more relaxed. I wasn't worrying about making sure that everybody was comfortable every single minute, every single, you know, watching them make pleasing. I was just relaxed, and I really enjoyed my time with them more than I normally would. You know, so that was, I don't know which one of those is the fourth number, whatever, it works.
Thank you for that. A little short 6-minute meditation. Look at the powerful effect that it can have on your life. And what you're describing, the leaves fluttering down to the deck and the birds, that's the ordinary part of life that becomes extraordinary when we're able to actually understand that it's going on and be present for it. There's such deep meaning in just the ordinary things that we would miss because of our distracted mind. And as far as the Four Noble Truths, the way you described it, it is first an intellectual exercise. That's how we, as human beings, we learn. We first take something in intellectually, and then we start applying it. And that's what an ongoing practice is about. That's what we do here. It's what the book is about. So you've developed a very good foundation to build the practice on. And as you start to integrate the entire Eightfold Path, that will support your developing understanding of the entire Four Noble Truths.
That's how I feel. I feel like I need to study it
a little
more. That's where I'm at.
And that's what we do here. Today I'm going to introduce the beginning, the first two factors of the Eightfold Path, which is the path that the Buddha taught to develop awakening or full human maturity. You know, in a very practical and direct way. This is basically what he's saying is if you do this, if you integrate this into your life, you can expect to develop a profound understanding of your own contributions to stress and develop a calm and peaceful mind that lasts. Mm-hmm. That's where we're going. So that little bit of experience that you had from that brief meditation, you can just start expanding that into your day-to-day life. So I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Just my name. What's your name?
Becky.
I didn't want to call you Jennifer's mother.
A lot of people do, though. It's okay.
Example reminded me of, if you remember the old refrigerators, they would go for a while and then they would just shut down and all of a sudden it was quiet.
Yes.
And you didn't realize that it blended in so much.
Yes.
That it, all of a sudden you appreciated the quiet.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, because it's because it's like the distraction of your mind is so powerful, you don't notice it until you quiet it, and then you can appreciate all the other things that come out in the background, like the fallen leaves and the wind. So that it kind of reminded me of that example, that you just, it goes on and it goes on, and you don't recognize it until you figure out how to quiet it.
Yeah, that is, that's a great analogy. And I guess I need a new refrigerator because mine's the next one. Jen, so good to see you.
So some of the stuff that Laura was saying, as usual, was resonating with me. And I think of the Four Noble Truths as... it's like in three-dimensional space in my mind, the bottom is conditioned mind, the top bottom floor is conditioned mind, and the top, and I hate to say bottom and top because it sounds like heaven, but I think of it, it's like a mall, bottom floor of the mall and the top floor of the mall, and there's a stairway going up, and you can see both floors. The bottom floor is like conditioning and ego and distraction and stress, and the top floor is the Eightfold Path, and the stairs going up are the Four Noble Truths. So all I have to do when I realize that I'm acting from ego or thinking from ego or in ego or stress or distracted is recognize that there's stress. And then just keep, like, sort of leaning into that and accepting that I don't know what's happening and that I am distracted and that nothing that I'm thinking or doing is relevant. And the only thing that's relevant is that I have a conditioned mind that is running the show. And then, and the more that I do that, the further along I get, where I start to recognize clinging and craving, and then I start to see, oh, you know, the Eightfold Path is a way out of this, and then, you know, the top step is I'm in right view. Now I can look back down and see everything clearly. And that stairway is something that I'm constantly, like, walking up. And then getting knocked off or leaping off or, you know, just walking down and then walking back up. And it's like I'm always on those steps of, you know, unless I'm an ego, which is often. But I'm always making the choice to walk up those steps. And I feel like I've walked to, like, right view and maybe some right intention, but the rest of it is, beautiful, and I felt wonderful, and then at the end of the day, I started feeling really terrible, and I realized that it was an entire day of, like, of ego, almost. It was like everybody around me telling me how great I am, and how great my relationship is, and how great, you know, and look at the bride, and look at her dress, and look at her hair, and, like, take pictures of her, and, you know, and by the end of the day, I was, like, well, exhausted, you know, tired, ready for bed, and, like, but wanting more, like, wanting more revelry, like, oh, it's over now, like, you know, and so the practice was helpful in that, at that time, to say, oh, okay, you've had enough, just go back to regular now, just a regular person.
Well, and
not special.
Good for you to see that and not let that the end of the day disappointment get away from you. Yeah, and it was a beautiful day. Your metaphor in the mall is great.
So
those stairs going up to right view, they go both ways, and a lot of times we'll take a few steps up, and know, kind of taste that a little bit and come back down. That's just the nature of it. You know, again, that's why right effort is part. You know, we need to be mindful. We gotta keep going. You know, that Kshanti, patient forbearance, just keep engaging with it, no matter what's occurring. You know, when the holidays come by or a lot of family stuff, all of that is a distraction, and it's natural to fall into it and let it get us off the path. But as long as we keep coming back, the end is assured. So, glad you're here. Please tell Alex I said hello.
Okay.
Good morning, Eva. Good to see you.
Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to be here with everyone. To use the mole idea, it's like I'm going up, but I'm the down escalator. So I'm going up, and that's constantly taking me right back to the conditioning. Because I find that, you know, certain things are agitating me, and then I just kind of keep telling myself, it's, you know, trying to take it apart and making myself realize that, you know, this part, what does it mean? What is it, you know, how real is it? And as I do that, I find that I'm able to at least, you know, get my mind off of the intense feeling of it, because I'm sort of breaking it apart, and then as I break it apart, I realize it's impermanence, and I like it, that idea. It's like it works right now for me. And then what happened to me yesterday, I had a kind of a stressful day, and when I got home, I think that what I should have done is stopped everything and tried to meditate, because at that point, I think it would have helped, and I didn't. And I had a couple of drinks instead, because that worked more instantly, you know.
Yeah.
I just put my mind on a whole other place instead of where I would have had to work with my meditation. And I feel so obviously, you know, reprimanded because of, you know, the aftermath of it. You know, I was not helped. It didn't help.
Yeah.
The meditation would have been such, was so obviously the right intention, which I just went down. So, but you know, and I just try to think, you know, to be gentle about it and not to beat myself up too much about it and so on. But just to realize how much easier it's to just go back to the conditioned way, and so much more of a challenge and a mindfulness needed to do the other meditation and to stick with that path. So it's easy to, for me to go off. Thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that, and for just having a few drinks and coming right back. That's a good thing. And that gaining an understanding of impermanence is it's so important, and it's so insightful, and it relates to the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha's first three discourses are considered his cardinal discourses, meaning they're maybe the most important ones he ever gave. And they relate to the three marks of existence, of impermanence, the not-self characteristic, and dukkha. And when you look at it that way, the first teaching that the Buddha ever gave is the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the sutta that introduced the Four Noble Truths. And that's the entire Four Noble Truths speaks to impermanence. His second discourse, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, speaks to the not-self characteristic. And the third discourse, the fire discourse, speaks to the fires of passion or dukkha. And so in a very real way, the Four Noble Truths develop an understanding of the impermanent nature of all things. And when the Buddha first taught that, and you hear me say this nearly every class, when the Buddha first taught the Four Noble Truths, Kandana heard that. Upon hearing it, he said, all conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation, meaning he deeply understood the nature of impermanence. And the Buddha said, you got it. You're good to go. So you're good to go. Jay, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Good to see you. Doing pretty well, thank you. Meditation, I've been able to keep up a consistent schedule. I have perhaps a lot less obligations than some of the folks. I'm retired. I have a lot of time on my hands, so it's not too difficult to find time to do it. Study the chapter, even highlighted things, set them in my mind, you know, a little bit. That was helpful. I don't know if I'm quite ready to give up the things that I have to give up to follow the instruction that you're giving, the instruction of the book. But I'm staying with it. I'm trying. Some of the terminology I can't quite get a grasp on, so I tend to simplicate things a little bit in my mind. Like, you know, to me, every stress is really suffering, or, you know, stress. I think that would be more typical. I think 4,500 years ago, or whenever they were talking about this, you know, they were talking about suffering, not so much we talk about stress, because that's a hard word now. But I think I'm getting it. You know, stress, shit happens, dukkha, you know, and that is unavoidable. But I got no problem apprehending that. I've known that since I was 10 years old, you know. But intellectually knowing that, yes, you can do something about it, and whatnot, and actually doing it, well, I'm sticking with the study here. Maybe that's only going to improve myself a bit. But definitely spending time and effort on trying to understand the book and again, trying to improve myself, perhaps.
Thank you. And that's it's just like that, too. There's nothing... there's nothing in the Dhamma, there's nothing that I would say, there's nothing that the Buddha would have ever said that says you have to let go of everything right now. We look at the things that we first have to recognize what is not skillful, and then it's our choice and our decision to let it go or not. You know, and it usually is in a very practical way. We get to the point where we realize this just doesn't suit me anymore, let it go. You know, and up until that point, you can play around with it as much as you want. And what you're describing is exactly how we come to develop this understanding. First, an intellectual exposure to it, and then we start integrating it into our lives, just like you described. So good for you, and thank you for saying that. Lisa, good morning. Good to see you.
I think of it as the foundation is going to be built with me, molecule by molecule.
And that's just fine. That's how it should be. You know, there's no time frame on this. There's nothing that says, you know, within 3 weeks you got to be this far along. It's just not that way. It is certainly at our own pace, because we're all dealing with different types of conditioned thinking, and you described that too. We're born into this world. That first noble truth, that there is dukkha occurs, describes everything that's occurring in the world. It is that place. It's a stress-inducing situation, mostly because of all things being impermanent. But we start gaining an understanding of that. We start integrating, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in today's talk, but we start integrating a different way of looking at the world, meaning we start developing right view. And then we can see how we fit into this world in a realistic way, rather than a way that is a self-referential way that is rooted in ignorance. We're looking at ourselves in relation to the world based on what we truly are. And that really changes everything. And you're gaining that understanding, molecule by molecule. Mm-hmm. That's how it is. Thank you. Maura, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm in the camp of maybe Laura, Jen, of like, what week are we on? Because I don't know. I thought we were on right intention, right view.
We are.
You're introducing that.
Yeah. Right. It's the week before, which is kind of confusing in a way, because I don't know how to find the week before if I'm reading the emails.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I'll talk about that in a second.
It's confusing, because for 2 weeks I've been on right view, right intention. How could that happen? But it's happening.
Well, because Tuesday's class is on that, right?
Yeah, right,
yes.
But I was here, like, you know.
But we missed a class.
For two.
We're behind.
Yeah, I'm behind the class. I'm just saying. I was here two Tuesdays ago and was in the same exact predicament 2 weeks ago. So something is confusing.
Well, maybe the confusing aspect is that you're studying, in other words, this past week, the Saturday Sangha was studying the Four Noble Truths. And this week you'll be studying right view and right intention. And so today's talk is on right view and right intention to introduce that week's study. But I understand that it is confusing. And so this is the last time that I'm going to run a Tuesday and Saturday Truth of Happiness course together.
Because
when we get out of sync because of the snow.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah, we're out of sync.
All right, well, I'm not really arguing the whole thing. I'm just saying that 2 weeks ago I was here, and because I didn't realize that the Saturday is 1 week behind, I had to figure we've got to be. It's 2 weeks from the last time I was here.
Well, but like Anthony said, it is described in the email what we're studying and what the talk will be.
I looked at the email. I read it incorrectly. So.
Okay, well.
I'm not arguing with you. You're always absolutely on point.
So what do you think of the Four Noble Truths?
But I think right intention and Four Noble Truths are obviously, they're completely intertwined.
Yes.
So one thing my meditation practice has been super consistent and highly nourishing. One of the things was really, really making it a priority, and nothing comes before it, which took a really took a long time to get there. So that's all I'll just say. That right view and understanding that. So with suffering, I would just say it's suffering and dissatisfaction and stress. I think what's always helped me very much is understanding that it's not just the what we see as what we don't want. It's the craving and the incessant tendencies towards a restless, dissatisfactory existence. Because my big dukkha, and I'm reluctant to even say it in this room this week, was I saw a picture of puppies in the coffee shop early in the week, and it created a tremendous amount of everything, you know. So I shouldn't say it, because I kept thinking, I can't even tell John, because It would never be acceptable because we share a dog. So. But anyway, I know. So my only point is that craving, right, arose, and a sense of self, like I could see myself being born right away as this person who's going to raise a therapy dog, and it's going to do this, and it's, the dog is going to be like this, and people are not going to like it, and I'm not going to talk to them, like, oh, you know, like, and I'm going to keep it to myself, like, there's just like this, anyway, this self, and I would see, okay, that's just dukkha arising, like, come back. And then whoosh, you know. So my only point is, like, how fast, within 60 seconds, a whole new person was born, you know, that owns this dog and will not be happy until I get that dog with the white face. And it can't be the other three dogs in the picture either, you know. And I actually went and did see the dog.
Me holding the dog.
I asked all the people I work with dementia if they thought I should get the dog, and they all raised their hands. I had to push some of their hands up in the air.
Did you ask anybody that didn't have dementia?
I did. They were not in favor. I already had myself leaving my job, you know, it was, anyway, so that's my only point, that the dukkha is not only, it's not just the, oh crap, I've had a bad day at work dukkha. Dukkha is arising all the time from wrong view and attachment and craving and all that, so second noble truth. And honestly, you know, just watching that and having compassion and seeing it, you know, just go off into space, coming back to what was present, letting go with a tremendous resistance, you know. It would come up, and I'd say, like, in my morning meditation, no dog, you know, like, in the beginning, like, because as soon as I'd sit down, it would start again. And I'd, like, really, right effort. No thinking about the dog. When the dog comes up in meditation, we just put it aside and let it roll. So there was cessation of dukkha. There is no doggy. I still have sadness. And I'm plotting for a year down the line.
So let me get this straight.
Only talk about the Four Noble Truths, not the dog.
Even puppies are included in dukkha?
Yes. I thought it can be. Would really like a partner.
So
I emailed him. He said we were on right intention,
but Bodhi wants about 300 puppies in his life. So.
The cats do not want the dog.
The second noble truth, craving originates and clinging perpetuates dukkha. You described it beautifully. Something arose. A picture of puppies arose. Craving followed. And once craving is there, now you're clinging. And clinging means you can't let go of it. It's a clinging view. You developed a view that was clinging to the idea of I'm getting a puppy.
Yeah.
And there it is. I mean, that's a perfect explanation and example of dukkha occurring. And I'll touch on right view and right intention in just a moment.
And the self that got created around that.
Yeah, and you're right.
Well-behaved dog.
That's a good example of what is meant, the useful application of rebirth or giving birth.
Yes.
You gave birth to a completely new identity that would not be happy until it got a puppy.
Yeah.
And apparently that person is still here in this room.
Yes, but she showed incredible restraint.
I agree.
Visiting the dog and not getting it.
I know.
Yeah.
And then
well, I would say restraint was not visiting the dog at all. But
the man said, you can walk out. I was in my hands. He said, you can walk out of it here right now with that puppy.
Yeah, he didn't even use that. What do I have to put this puppy in your hands today? Thank you, Laura.
Sheep-a-doodle.
Wow. Jay, you had
I was going to say the dupe is when you get home after you got the puppy.
Oh, yeah. You realize it needs a couple weeks of training.
No, we're going to take all the furniture out of the downstairs.
She's got it. Oh, my goodness.
Good to see you, Debbie. How are you? How's your study?
Okay, I kind of lose each week. I'm trying to just kind of also read through the book, which I've never totally read through, so like kind of way ahead in chapters, and so I had to kind of go back and review a little bit. And I think last week maybe back to the chapter, so I'm a bit confused too, but it's all helpful. And first of all, I just want to comment on the course. For me, for sharing that, gave this whole experience today some joy.
Yeah.
It's joy. And all because of your awareness and sharing that. Yeah, that's the other side of it. You know? So that was really wonderful for me. To be, I mean, I don't hear myself laughing enough, so that was just, I appreciate that. And I guess for me, it's like I'm writing down, I'm like Eva writing down the escalator or whatever, because more often than I want, I'm realizing stuff after the fact. My awareness sometimes is more than it used to for me at the moment, but a lot of times it's after the fact. Oh, really, like, at least she went through that experience with awareness. And sometimes I don't get the awareness till I'm through the experience, you know. I'll have the dog ready. not necessarily that, but, you know. So it's kind of a mix. Sometimes I'm going up, sometimes I'm going down.
Yeah, there's the staircase again.
Sometimes I'm happy that I'm a little more aware, and other times I'm frustrated. And I still really struggle with meditation. I'm not in terms of time, I decide I'm doing 20 minutes in the morning and stuff, but and then maybe getting acceptance out of here and there right now. So I'm still so agitated. Yeah. I get that I'm becoming more aware because I'm becoming more aware of my mind and what it's doing.
Yeah.
But
you still, mindfulness is recognition and renunciation. You first have to recognize, and that's where you are. You have to know where you are, and this what's occurring in my mind right now. Ignorance, which leads to all the suffering in the world, is a product of conditioned mind, and conditioned mind insists on remaining ignorant. And an aspect of ignorance is to ignore what's right in front of us. And that's what we do with a distracted mind. But you are no longer able to do that. Like Laura was saying, once you're in it, you can't get out of it, you know? I mean, I guess you could really turn your back on it. But it's difficult because now you know the difference. That's the beginning of developing right view. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. Eva, you had something?
I said it's snowing. It started to snow.
Oh, it's time to get out of here and for me to go home.
Can I add one little thing to what Becky had said about the leaves and the sound of the wind, which is beautiful. We know so many different sounds. But also, in terms of my professional practice, my work with individuals, the amount of subtleties that I can see in their state has really improved. So where I used to miss changes in all kinds of medical conditions, like it's interesting because I just see my mind is much less distracted, and I can see a larger vision. I can put it in the context too of what's relevant to attention, what isn't attention.
Thank you. That's an aspect of developing a refined or heightened level of mindfulness. The Buddha was often seen as someone who had superhuman mental qualities, like ESP or clairvoyance, when the truth of the matter was he just had such an advanced level of mindfulness that he could look at someone for a moment and he knew everything about them. But that's just because he understood humanity, because he understood himself. And Laura is describing that beautifully. The more we're able to stay present with what's occurring, the more we can see what's occurring, including in other people. It just makes our life much more meaningful. We can hear the leaves hit the deck. Who cares? Well, I care. That's what's occurring. That's what I want to be present for. That, you know, that's the big change in my life. And I think what you're all describing as you're integrating the Dhamma is really the ability to be present without distracting yourself from what's here. It's its own reward. So, we're going to study right view and right intention. Right, those are the first two factors of the Eightfold Path. Pardon me? So, as the Buddha described Four Noble Truths this way: dukkha occurs, craving originates, clinging perpetuates. Dukkha, this is individual. The Third Noble Truth says it is possible to end this process of our own contributions to ongoing stress or suffering. And the path leading to that is the Eightfold Path. The reason why I'm pausing is that is everything the Buddha taught. Of course, he spent the next 45 years of his life teaching how to apply these things in very specific applications, how things arose. Sometimes he was talking to individuals. Sometimes he was talking to large groups. Sometimes he was talking to leaders. Sometimes he was talking to the lowest of the low. And the reason why I'm saying that is he presented this Dhamma for human beings, and no human being was ever excluded. Now, excuse me. The first factor of the Eightfold Path is right view. And each factor of the Eightfold Path implies that there is a wrong view. Another words that can be used are skillful and unskillful, or appropriate or inappropriate, but we'll use right and wrong. So wrong view is a view that is rooted in ignorance, and it's a very specific ignorance. It's ignorance of Four Noble Truths. In other words, as human beings who have yet awakened, we're living our entire lives from a view that is rooted in ignorance, a wrong view. So a right view is a view of a fully awakened, fully mature human being who is no longer ignorant of Four Noble Truths. And again, the reason why I say that is to keep bringing it back to Four Noble Truths. This is what we're developing an understanding of. And if right view is the initial right view is simply the understanding that, well, this makes sense. I don't think I understand everything that's occurring in the world, and I know because I'm in stress at times. I'm disappointed at times. Sometimes my life feels unsatisfying. Sometimes I'm so full of fear, or I'm angry, or I'm just confused. Those are all aspects of the first dukkha, the first noble truth. And understanding that there's a different way of seeing this, and that there's a human being that actually achieved this understanding and taught others how to do it, is the beginning of right view. So that being said, right view is starting to incline our minds towards developing an understanding of stress. The second noble truth says that craving originates and clinging perpetuates stress, individual craving. So the second factor of the Eightfold Path is right aligned with the second noble truth. Right intention is the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging in our lives, so that through this refined mindfulness, we can simply abandon that when we recognize it. Jay brought it up in a very nice way. I'm not ready to let go of everything yet. Well, we don't have to. In fact, you can't. But what you can do is to develop the refined mindfulness that's rooted in that beginning level of right view. Maybe we can call it mundane right view. That allows us to maintain that strong intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging. Now, next week, if we keep this all straight, I'll be introducing, or we'll be studying right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the reason why those follow in a very nice way after right intention. So now I've developed the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging. How do I do it? I do it by becoming mindful of my thoughts, words, and deeds, by my speech, my actions, and my livelihood. This is the virtuous factors that we'll get into next week are one of the reasons why many people say the Buddha was teaching a religion, because this morality and ethics are common in all religions. And that's not that the Buddha didn't teach right speech, action, and livelihood to develop a more moral and ethical way of living in the world, but primarily it follows right intention. When we're mindful of our thoughts, words, and deeds, we can then clearly see where our intentions are taking us. In other words, if I'm spending a lot of time in gossip or idle chatter, I know that my intention is to keep myself distracted and to keep elevating an ego personality. But if I'm mindful of it, if I find myself gossiping and I remember, wait a minute, this is hurtful to me and other people, I don't want to do that anymore. And we simply abandon it. That's how we apply the Dhamma. That's how right intention helps us to develop the entire Dhamma. And at its core, right intention is the guiding factor for everything we do. The more we can hold in mind right intention, the more we can recognize and abandon those things that continue ignorance and continue confusion, delusion, and suffering. So right view is kind of the entry into the Dhamma. Right intention carries us along. And as we develop the Dhamma, we'll develop with super mundane right view, to put a word on it, but simply awakened right view, that the Buddha described this way. Right view understands stress, but it understands it at a deep and profound level. Right view is a view that has developed the abandonment of craving and clinging. Right view has experienced the cessation of stress. Right view has developed, fully developed, the Eightfold Path. So you can see how right view is both the entry into the Dhamma and an expression of a fully awakened human being. We rest in that right view. And what does it mean? It means that we're simply seeing life clearly. We're living in reality. We're no longer caught up in the interplay between impermanence and a not-self characteristic, because we're no longer living with right with wrong views, which is how the Buddha described the not-self characteristic. He's simply saying that it's your views of self that are wrong. Let go of the views. So I think it was, Lisa, you touched on some of the great questions. You know, where am I? Where am I going? Where do I come from? Those are things that the Buddha said, don't even think about them. They don't relate to the Dhamma. They're not important to the problem here. They can really develop a wrong view when we get stuck in, I need to know where I'm from, where I'm going, what happens to me after death, is the universe finite or infinite? All of those are distraction from the Dhamma, and they're a distraction from right view. What is right view? Right view is fully understanding who I am in relation to what's occurring. Right view is something is being fully present with the leaves falling on the deck and having the presence of mind to recognize it. And the quality of mind to appreciate it. That's the beginning of right view. So that's your study this week, if you're coming to the Saturday class. If you're coming to the Tuesday class, good luck keeping it track in context, because I'm having trouble. So we'll study right view and right intention. We'll talk about that next week here. And then I'll introduce the virtuous factors. So any questions about that and how to apply this? No? We're good? All right. So let's finish with the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body, and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an expression of a fully awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is no longer born into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.